Welcome back to Big News Wednesday. Yes. Nice. See, I mentioned it like 2 hours ago, but then didn't confirm, so I wasn't sure, but it happened. Thank you to the director, Brandon, you're the best. And JR also, well, obviously not the best. There can only be one best, and we've established it's Brandon. But second best is JR Jackson, who returns.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll just take it. But you know, I Brandon is the best, I must say. He's one who's got us flowing right now. So I'll take it for now, but hopefully by the end of the show, I will have captured your hearts.
We'll see. And I've heard that you wanted more time dedicated to you trying to capture people's hearts. And so you've got a show coming up. What's that all about?
Oh, it's all about the watch list. So as you guys know, I've always been the video guy and cultivate the stuff that happens on the show, but that's of course expanded. But every day, you know, we're gonna do this a daily show morning just before the damage report. The watch list, the videos you should see, the stories you should talk about, the things that is gonna change your life, society, entertainment, sports, politics still mainly. So don't be scared. We're gonna go that direction still. We're gonna have fun still, and we're gonna do it just the way I like to do it.
So pretty much it could be anything. You could literally talk about the Super Bowl. You could talk about a movie you saw. You could talk about a viral video. You could talk about Joe Manchin.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be the Super Bowl. Super Bowl. Like, if it's a Super Bowl, it's gonna be what happened there and this guy who jumped on the field, or then hot dogs for $15, you know, stuff like that.
By the way, aren't we not supposed to use that term? Don't they get like really mad if you even say the official term for that game? I don't know. Feel like, that's how little I know.
It's somewhere in there.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're very glad to have you here. While we have you here, eventually we hope to have you here again. But the watch list is coming up in just a couple of weeks, so everybody get ready for that.
John, and, sorry. I always interrupt you, right? That's the one thing you're not gonna miss is me interrupt you in the middle of a very important sentence, which I do a lot, but I will not steal Fran on Mondays. That I promise you.
See, I appreciate you saying that, but the fact that you keep saying it makes it seem threatening almost.
Francesca, she's a grown adult of her own free will. She can do whatever she wants. No one makes her do
choices. She'll make her own choices. Anyway. I hope that you have all chosen to watch 90 minutes of awesome news, which we're about to launch into, talking about everything from voting rights to Ron DeSantis being a big old weenie to, hey, Ted Cruz is strong again. That coming according to Ted Cruz. And also, to close out the show, the last half hour, we have got a massive Big News Wednesday sized meanwhile in news from truly around the world. We've got animal news. We've got gates of hell news. We've got way too much news. So don't go anywhere because that's coming. But if you want to take a slight detour, don't go anywhere, but take a slight detour down to the like button, perhaps sharing the stream on Twitter or whatever. That would be great as we jump into this. And with all that said, JR, you ready to do this thing?
I'm ready. In fact, I just liked the stream.
Thank you very much for that. And now I've got what I like to call a watch list of videos you should see. Here is the first.
Call on Congress to get done what history will judge. Pass the Freedom to Vote Act. Pass it now, which will prevent voter suppression. So here in Georgia, there's full access to voting by mail. There are enough drop boxes during enough hours so that you can bring food and water as well to people waiting in line. The Freedom to Vote Act takes on election subversion to protect nonpartisan electors, officials who are doing their job from intimidation and interference. It would get dark money out of politics. Create fair district maps and ending partisan gerrymandering. Look, it's also time to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. I've been having these quiet conversations with the members of Congress for the last 2 months. I'm tired of being quiet.
So Joe Biden now tired of being quiet a couple of months after we were already tired of him being quiet for about 8 months, because while some of the people in the background of that shot were very excited to hear the president talk about voter suppression and what he wants done about it. I too am excited for him to address this 8 days shy of 1 year after his inauguration. When we were already seeing, at the time of the inauguration, we were already seeing many Republican-led states stamping out people's ability to vote. Well, he's now talking. JR, he's tired of being quiet, and so he's speaking a little bit. What do you think?
Listen. I'm okay with this. I'm okay with the speech. I'm okay with the fire. I'm okay with the banging on the table, which later we're gonna talk about someone else banging on podiums that didn't go over so well. But I'm okay with all this stuff. I'm okay with the heightened rhetoric, and now he's angry, even though all of this, of course, is generated and staff driven in a written speech right here. We know that. That's all politicians. That's not a knock on Democrats versus Republicans and Joe Biden and all that stuff. That's what all of them do. I'm okay with it because now it's even more on tape. I don't like the quiet conversations because we don't know what you're saying. We don't know how much you're saying. Maybe we'll just kind of show them that we kind of want to and sort of somewhat. Have the conversation out loud. Yes, no more quiet ones. So that now, if and when, or if you don't do this, we've got you directly saying this is what you want to do and this is what you're going to be striving towards. So if you don't, which we've seen it happen in so many other policies so far just in this first year, you have to answer for it. Now you're losing all of this talk about how libs and progressives keep talking down Democrats. And if we lose in the midterms and eventually lose the presidency, it's their fault. We got you on tape saying you're gonna do these things. And if you don't do it, we see whose fault it really is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mostly agree. Look, certainly I like getting politicians on the record. In this particular case, though, the only issue I have is that so you said he'll have to answer for it. And I guess he will, but like, so will we kind of. Like, if it doesn't happen, could he suffer in some ways? Well, yes, I would argue that the midterms are not going to go well for his party. And so, you know, second order effect, he'll suffer. But like, we'll lose Democratic control of the House and Democratic control of the Senate. We'll lose any chance in the next 3 years of like literally anything happening. And it'll probably screw them over for 2024 as well. I mean, if they let this gerrymandering happen, if they let all this voter suppression happen, they have a much less chance of any Democrat actually winning. So like, we're all gonna have to answer for it. And the issue too is that like, he's tired of being quiet. So now he's speaking, but like, wait, that's not like 0 to 60 right there, buddy. Oh, like, okay, so now you're speaking. That's like 15 miles per hour. That's not what we need. What was that whole speech about Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and Tester and Shaheen and the others who aren't reforming the filibuster? Because asking for a bill to be passed under conditions in which literally nothing can be passed seems pointless. Like, you have to make it about the filibuster, which, by the way, we'll go on in a second. He does want to reform the filibuster, but that also has to happen at some point. And as of right now, it doesn't look like it's going to. And it's not some mystery as to why that is. So if you know what's stopping the change from happening, that's stopping the bill from happening, you need to talk about the thing that's stopping both of those things. That's what your effort should be on. And not just talking, putting actual pressure. Go to their state, start raising money for primary contenders to them. There are other things you can do. It's not guaranteed that any of those things will actually succeed, but we need you to be seen to be making an effort. And that speech doesn't count, doesn't qualify as making enough of an effort.
I agree. It's just now he's got to make that. He has to now do some action. Because like, again, politicians can sit back and be quiet and say, yeah, I said it, right? Maybe you kind of didn't hear it. But he's out here making this very pronounced speech, making sure people know and come out, wanted folks to be there that weren't. So they're making at least an exhibition of it. Mm-hmm. Action has to follow. If it doesn't, you no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah. So we'll see. Now, Joe Biden, well, you know what? Actually, why don't we go to his other comment? We've got another video of him talking about the filibuster. We should get that out there for context.
Designed to be the world's greatest deliberative body, has been rendered a shell of its former self. Gives me no satisfaction in saying that, as an institutionalist, as a man who was honored to serve in the Senate. But as an institutionalist, I believe that the threat to our democracy is so grave that we must find a way to pass these voting rights bills. Debate them, vote, let the majority prevail. And if that bare minimum is blocked, we have no option but to change the Senate rules, including getting rid of the filibuster for this.
Okay, so look, the president giving a big speech calling for the filibuster to be removed for this, he
for
says,
this.
Specifically a carve out. Let's be clear, but look, I'm fine with that as a short-term solution is something, but again, there's still a lot of issues with that actually getting passed. So it's something, but it's so far just a speech. It's a speech, but it's also just a speech.
I get the feeling you're losing some faith in the possible actions of this administration and actually getting something done. Did you ever really fully believe that there was something was gonna happen here?
Specifically with voting rights?
With anything, because we've seen how they failed on a few things. Not even just failed, but
I don't know. Yeah, look, they put out a lot of like Manchin and Sinema. You remember, we've been through 30 different iterations of, hey, maybe a talking filibuster, maybe a carve out. They've done that over and over. Then they denied that they did it, but we've got the quotes. So I don't know. I'm not necessarily gonna try to kick the football every time you put it out, but I might like glance at the football once. And I guess I look stupid even for that, but. Anyway.
What you have to do is make sure that Lucy is looking away while she's holding the football so she doesn't know you're about to kick it and then you exactly. get hurt.
That's true. And she's holding the football with this. Joe Biden gave that massive speech, signals a changing position on the filibuster and voting rights, you know, for the country, but also he wanted to give it for the actual activists who are fighting to make sure that people can vote. People like Stacey Abrams, but also many different groups operating throughout the country. Many of those groups, though, were not there at the speech. In fact, let's see, we've got Black Voters Matter, Impact Fund, New Georgia Project Action Fund, the Asian American Advocacy Fund, the Atlanta North Georgia Labor Council, along with James Woodall, the Georgia NAACP president. They all announced that they weren't going to be there for the speech. They weren't there to hear Joe Biden or Kamala Harris when she ended up speaking either. A joint statement from the Voting Rights Coalition says Georgia voters made history and made their voices heard, overcoming obstacles, threats, and suppressive laws to deliver the White House and the US Senate. In return, a visit has been forced on them, requiring them to accept political platitudes and repetitious bland promises. Such an empty gesture without concrete action, without signs of real tangible work is unacceptable. So that's kind of what we got. I mean, even the bland, tepid statements are better than I suppose what we had for many months. But the prediction there from the Voting Rights Coalition about what was going to be done at those speeches, not inaccurate. There wasn't like, you know, like a vigorous condemnation of individual senators, a calling out of their corruption that leads to them opposing reforms of the filibuster. There wasn't anything like that. There was voting is good and you should be able to. What do you think about them not being there? And by the way, let's also throw out that Stacey Abrams specifically wasn't there, noticeably absent, said that there was an unspecified scheduling conflict. I am hardly the busiest man in America. Maybe some people have much more complex schedules than me, and maybe that leads to scheduling conflicts. I don't buy it. I think you'd make time if you were really supportive of the president and the vice president. And they like specifically want you to be there and you're going to be running for office in that state. I think you make time for it unless you don't want to make time for it.
Why would she not
think about that?
But why would she not want to make time for it? For those same reasons, obviously, the Voting Rights Coalition went through the whole thing. So she's on board with that thought process. But as you mentioned, because she's going to run for office, because she was specifically invited by the president, current president of your party, and is in office right now and is making this type of fiery speech, which he has been making before, we need you. And then this is the type of illustration that then you give back to them. From these types of voting rights coalitions, from minority voters, from other people that you've shunned to the side and still enjoy their support. Show them what we've always been saying. Yes, we need you so that you can pass these laws and legislation, all this stuff, but you need us. You're not in office without us. And it seems like such a simple equation. We know it, but we don't really act on it. So of course, establishment politicians can always roll into town. This is any party, by the way, can always roll into town and be like, the president is here. I know you guys said you don't like me, you don't like what I'm doing, but I'm here. And when the president comes, you sit down and stand behind me and look great for me. No, not anymore. That stuff is changing. We're not going to continue to be pawns in the back of your photo opportunity to make sure that you look good. No, man.
Yeah. No, no. And so I respect that as a decision. And I get that, like, you know, Psaki like wasn't going to admit that they had been stood up by all these groups. Biden asked about this yesterday, says about Abrams. He spoke to her. We're all on the same page. We have a great relationship. We got our scheduling mixed up. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No. And like, you know, when I asked a girl to go out with me in elementary school, she did just have to wash her hair. Like, you know, it's a scheduling con. Like, I wanted to go on a date. She wanted to wash her hair. It happens.
John got started anyway. Early, man. I wasn't asking girls out till I was like 15.
I also very much was not, by the way. Anyway, I am fake news. Okay. Really fast. If the filibuster is going to be reformed, what needs to be done to make that happen is to get those who are stopping the reform from happening to sign on. That seems pretty clear. Well, oh my God, there was an opportunity that opened up this morning. Eric Wasson on Twitter reporting, Schumer says 9 senators will meet with Manchin this morning to try to convince on filibuster carve out. He says only 2 senators oppose such a carve out, which Eric Wasson then clarifies, 2 Dem senators. We get it, Eric. You don't need to clarify that. All of the Republicans are against it. We get what you're saying, buddy. So anyway, Schumer was bringing in a couple of hired guns, Harvard professors Steven Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt, the authors of How Democracies Die, to present to the Senate Dem Caucus today at their virtual lunch on their research and the urgency of passing voter rights legislation to address growing threats to democracy. So that's good. So they're bringing in not only their colleagues, they're bringing in experts, academics. And so a couple of hours pass, a few moments later, that's an honor of JR there. Eric Wasson reporting, after this meeting, Schumer said, quote, we're not there yet. Well, yes, that's sort of.
We're not where yet.
Anywhere, not anywhere.
Wait, so this is an answer to the to what happened in the meeting where they're supposed to present to the Senate Democratic Caucus at the virtual lunch their research and the urgency of passing voting rights legislation. Is that what Schumer's referring to? You haven't gotten very far with convincing Democrats that voting rights legislation is important. Not that they should be on board with changing filibuster rules to get it done, but simply that is an urgency behind passing voting rights legislation. That's what we're fighting over. That's what Democrats are fighting over, whether or not voting rights legislation is important. And the 2 senators that they're fighting with don't think it's very important. Say it like it is. Stop saying, oh, we're not there yet. We're not there yet because these 2 don't believe in voting rights legislation. They're acting like Republicans. In fact, if they do believe in voting rights legislation, they're turning their back on it because Republicans rule them. Say it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the very least donors do. Yeah. Yeah. They're
donors. Like, yes. Actually.
Manchin isn't doing anything. And someone in the chat said, I didn't see this. I in fact searched for it, that Sinema also was meeting with some people about, oh, well, I'm sure that's going to work out way better. I think by tomorrow, no more filibuster. It's just us. It's been Thanos. No, I don't like, we cannot get, okay. I want to be hopeful and I want to be a source occasionally when it's rational of hope for the audience, but we also have to keep it real. Where reform of the filibuster sits is that we cannot get them to even agree to reform the filibuster so that the Republicans have to filibuster. We can't get them to even do that. Because by the way, the voting rights bill was filibustered this week. You may not have seen a lot of headlines about it because in addition to the Democrats, and I'm, by the way, when I say the Democrats, I'm not even just talking about Manchin here. Where's Chuck Schumer demanding that they actually speak? I want to see Mitch McConnell's neck like a waddle wobbling back and forth for the next 64 hours straight. I want to see that. Well, I don't have to, or I don't get to because Schumer's not requiring it. And the media in their headlines don't even call it a filibuster. They're like, blocked a simple majority vote. Oh, well, if only there was a definition for the thing that you just said. And so, no, they're not, they won't even make them actually filibuster. The country could, if you made them do 10 straight days, the Republicans, of reading the Cat in the Hat just to stop people from being able to vote, that might hurt them. Maybe it wouldn't. Maybe our country is too far gone, but we could find out together. Except now we won't have to. We won't get to. There's no cost to filibustering if you don't have to filibuster.
Yep, if you don't even talk about it. Now, Republicans, my final thought on this is Republicans come out. We see Mitch McConnell coming out. We see McCarthy coming out. Talking about the things they're going to do when they win back the House and win back the Senate in 22. We're going to punish Democrats. We're going to retaliate against them for things that they did to us, which was nothing. If they get rid of the filibuster, I'm going to pass the most extreme, stupid laws you could ever imagine. Go ahead, Mitch. If you pass the most extreme, stupid laws ever, Americans are gonna have to feel that. Why are we so afraid of them passing devastating laws? If someone says, hey, be careful, I'm gonna start cutting myself if you guys keep, yeah, hurt yourself then. That's your choice, bro. Don't come around telling me what you're gonna do when you have no power to keep controlling me when I do have power because the American people voted me in office. When's the last time you heard Democrats say mandate? When's the last time you heard elected officials that just got elected say, hey, the American people elected me and I'll step aside? Republicans do it all the time. Republicans do it when they don't have a mandate.
Yeah.
People believe it anyway.
Yeah, step one is always claim a mandate. It could be the closest election ever and sometimes is, and they will claim the biggest mandate history has ever seen.
They're claiming mandates before they've even won in 22 right now.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating. Okay, so here's what's gonna happen. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, Donald Trump calling out Ron DeSantis. It should be at least a load of fun. We'll be right back. Okay, everybody, let's jump into this video.
I've taken it. I've had the booster. Many politicians, I watched a couple of politicians be interviewed. And one of the questions was, did you get the booster? Because they had the vaccine. And they're answering it like, in other words, the answer is yes, but they don't want to say it. Because they're gutless. You got to say it. Whether you had it or not, say it.
Okay, so Donald Trump doesn't often say something that I think is fairly, you know, not to insult Rashad Ritchie, indisputable, rational, coherent. But there he sort of did. Some politicians do get asked about their vaccination status, pundits as well, and just won't give a straight answer. It is squirrely and oily. It's the worst sort of, like, you know, not wanting to offend any potential voter politics. It's cowardly. And let's be clear, he is just talking about Ron DeSantis there. I mean, other people have been asked, but very recently there was a whole news cycle of Ron DeSantis very specifically not answering questions about this. Just in mid-December, he was asked the question on Fox News Channel, and DeSantis said, so I've done whatever I did, the normal shot, and that at the end of the day is people's individual decisions about what they want to do. Dude, answer the question, you little weenie baby. Just answer the question, but he won't. And so Trump gets to mock him, and we unfortunately have to side with Trump here. It feels weird. What do you think, JR?
Well, this is a tear he's gone on. And honestly, it's not too surprising. Listen, we've seen Donald Trump lead this Republican Party down a particular road. Then, as they follow him towards the cliff, he stops and steps out of the way. You know, it's exactly what he does every time to them. So he's led them down to anti-vax, the anti-masking route. Oh my God, this vaccine sucks. Oh my God, if you take it, you know you're a Democrat. You know you're helping the other party. And they were like, great, this is a good thing. We can utilize the guy that we hate and garner all of his supporters behind us, all those crazy people, and then we'll take it. And then whether or not he runs or not, maybe people will get tired of him, then we've got all this extra energy. They just wanted the energy from him. Now, he keeps making these left turns at the last second, and they're left holding the bag.
Yeah.
So now, as he sees it happen, he's criticizing the very people that he led down the same road, and they're kind of left up the creek without a paddle.
Yeah. That's true. I like mixing up the analogies. They don't have that weird ability he has, and the ability that's been given to him by the base, which is he can just say anything, and he can say it, you know, like really blatantly, and like they might disagree with him, but then he reverses position. Like DeSantis is Trump-like, but he's also trying to be a politician. He's trying to be careful and calculating. Trump has never calculated anything, like literally a single thing in his life. And so he doesn't have to here. However, before we move on to more of the commentary, I have seen some comments from people saying, hate to have to agree with a con man, feels weird to agree with Trump. And so I made you feel those feelings for a few minutes, but let me make you feel a little bit better here. So Donald Trump is 100% right that Ron DeSantis is a weenie. And in his commentary, he is calling out cowardly politicians who won't just say what they mean. They won't be explicit. Say if you got vaccinated or not. If you just like imply something without saying it, you're being a coward. And you know who else is being a coward? Donald Trump, because he didn't say Ron DeSantis in that. We know that that's what he's talking about. It's the most obvious thing in the world. So just say it, buddy. Why are you just implying it and dancing around? Oh, I don't want to insult Ron DeSantis. I thought you were the big alpha. I thought you were the big man. You can't call out Ron DeSantis. You know he's not going to fight back. He's a baby too. But Trump is being a coward as well. I agree with him, but I agree with a coward.
Damn, anyway. John. Actually, I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good point. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. I tried. Donald Trump had more to say about these weenie politicians, but also about the vaccine and all that. Here's more of his commentary.
But the fact is that I think the vaccine has saved tens of millions of people throughout the world.
Really thought that was longer. I think I might have put in the wrong time codes. Anyway, so look, he wants the credit, obviously. He wants the credit. I don't remember what the rest of the video was. So he wants the credit for doing the vaccine, but then he does go on and talk about, but obviously the mandates are bad and it's got to be up to the individual people and all of that. So the issue is there. He is saying he got it. That's good. That's first check mark for a politician, especially a right winger. The second is he says that it's a good thing that it's out there, that it saved 10 million lives. It's an exaggeration and he wasn't involved all of them. The whole thing is rife with misinformation. But then he starts to undercut it with the, it has to be your individual choice. Yeah, obviously every single thing you do is your individual choice. But he is doing, let's keep it real again on the cowardly thing. When he goes from, I'm vaccinated, it might save your life, but it's tyrannical to make you do it or whatever. He's doing a version of the thing that Ron DeSantis is doing. It's not as pathetic. But he is trying to once again stroke the hair of the stupid scared anti-vaxxers and make them feel great about everything. And that is coddling in a less explicit way anti-vax sentiment. So frustrating too.
It's the operating procedure. It's how they're gonna have to operate from here on out. Because in order to rile up people with this level of disinformation and anger, vitriol, which could also lead to physical violence, which we've seen a lot of times already happen, it's you have to inject a large amount of this negativity. And then that doesn't leave much room for saying anything good or positive, that anything going forward. So they've cornered themselves a bit. And I'm not sure how, you know, in multiple ways, by the way. So
yeah. By the way, I just remembered what was in that video. He goes on and talks about how these young people, they shouldn't have it. If you're young and healthy, Barron had it for 3 minutes, it was just gone. That again, rife with misinformation. Yes, kids tend to do better, but some have died. Many have been hospitalized, and along the way, they can pass it to people who will not do as well. And again, saying if you're healthy, you don't need to do something like this is nonsensical. It is only healthy people that need to get vaccinated. The unhealthy people have it. That's why they're unhealthy, okay? Yes, you're healthy now. You know what hurts your health? The virus. That's what hurts your health. So get vaccinated. Anyway, Donald Trump has this weird relationship with some members of his base right now where they are far more anti-vax than he is. He tries to appeal to them, he tries to be diplomatic, but he thinks you should take the vaccine. That is a gulf between him and that base. And they, on the other hand, have this thing where if like you're a right-wing host, you have to attack the vaccine constantly. That's how your bread is buttered. That's how you make your money and keep your audience. If you don't do that, you'll be gone instantly. But they also have to, like with Candace Owens a few weeks ago, sort of thread the needle where they're criticizing the vaccine, but wanting to give him credit for it and not wanting to disagree with him too much because they need him to like them too. It can be really awkward. I want to demonstrate one right-wing media member trying to thread that needle.
The booster,
right?
And you recommend it for folks. We have seen with the VAERS report, there's tens of thousands of side effects, more side effects in this vax than any vax in history. And back, we know that Warp Speed was great. You did amazing with getting rid of red tape to get something out there. But after now so many months of the vaccine being administered and these side effects and Americans' questions of it, do you reconsider your push for it?
And that, by the way, is what leads into him calling out the weenie politicians and everything. But JR, what do you think about what that, I don't care, the clone of Tucker Carlson or whatever had to say?
You regret your push for it? Well, give me some information, you know, because of all those side effects that happened. Like what? There's always just an aside. There's supposed to be a fact here. And yeah, sure, people have had some side effects, but is that what's keeping people from getting it because they're afraid of the side effects or because they've attached their identity to this movement of being an anti-vaxxer or a conservative, whatever it is, because it's not all conservatives. I want to make sure we also dispel that, because every time I mention conservatives and anti-vax, it crosses the board. It's some people who have no political ideology are anti-vaxxers. So it's, so when you, people have attached their identity to it, and where this huge influx of it has come from is the people who think they're these conservative and Republicans, and they can't break the rules of being a conservative and Republican. So they have to be anti-vax and they're afraid of this. And it's just, it's who they are. My grandfather was a Republican, so I'm a Republican. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Right now, who's dying and who's helping inflict pain upon American people? So think about it for yourself. So yeah, he has to toe the line to make sure people still hold their identity as a Republican and conservative and anti-vaxxer somehow. But then maybe get boosted. It's a hard line to toe.
Yeah.
And you're gonna sound ridiculous every time because it doesn't really add up.
Here's how ridiculous you will sound. Think about what he just said there. He said, obviously Operation Warp Speed was great. You did amazing, tremendous, historic work in getting that thing out there that then has killed thousands of people because it wasn't tested properly. It in fact is destroying people's hearts and brains, killing children and elderly alike. It's the apocalypse. And you did a great job in getting it out there so quickly. In fact, you cut red tape that possibly would have detected the damage it can do to your heart, myocarditis. It'll put you in your grave. That's insanity, what the dance that you just saw there. But that's what he was saying.
Yeah.
God, what a weird relationship they have with their their dear
brain, with their brains, their own brains.
Who also with their brains. By the way, I just wanted to throw out the Ron DeSantis thing. Why call out Ron DeSantis? So you already know why he's calling out Ron DeSantis. He's worried about Ron DeSantis running for president. And I doubt he's that worried. I think he thinks, and I think Ron DeSantis thinks, that if Trump runs, and he probably will, that Ron DeSantis isn't gonna risk going up against him. But Trump is apparently worried about it enough to call him out and to talk behind the scenes. Maggie Haberman behind the scenes is saying that Trump says that DeSantis isn't showing him enough deference. Trump could always decide not to run, but every indication is he will. And once again, he's moving to set the terms of engagement with his potential rivals, while those rivals are mostly averting their gaze and hoping he goes away.
Jesus.
Which is literally a thing that has been observed in chimpanzees. When a chimpanzee will see a banana, they know that if they look at that banana and the alpha chimp sees them looking at the banana, it will follow their gaze and take the banana. So they will very seriously look away until the other monkey leaves. So the GOP has reached the level of chimps. And so anyway, yeah, this is all about posturing for 2024. That's all.
Man, imagine having to be in this situation. You think you're a powerful politician.
You want the banana, but you can't get it yet?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I just don't want the chips.
Same idea for them. That banana's dangling in front of them. They're like, but Trump is gonna rip my knuckles off.
Exactly. Don't mess with a chimp. Okay, so we're gonna jump into this next video in just one sec, but we have been warned by Sophie not to take forever. So I will try not to. Let's watch this video.
Once, I'd like to see a reporter say to Joe Biden when he stands at the damn podium in the White House without a mask, Mr. President, why aren't you wearing a mask? Just once, I'd like to see you say to Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, when she stands at the podium with no mask, Ms. Psaki, why don't you have a mask?
Thank you all.
Now, before you laugh at Ted Cruz, and spoiler alert, we will, the technique that he's using there is time honored, from Soviet leaders like Khrushchev to, I don't know, salesman at Dunder Mifflin. That is how you show that you're an alpha male and sales will go high into the next quarter. That's you. You all said I was a coward. Not a coward. Could a coward hit this like this over and over? JR, what is wrong with him? It's so pathetic.
Oh God, he's trying anything. It's desperation. But listen. He even used a kind of curse word. He said, damn, as he hit the table. Do you forgot? It was damn podium. That damn podium. So he's upset at the podium. He's upset at Joe Biden, and he's upset at Jen Psaki. Now, I'm sure there's people who will be like, he's making a point because you guys never ask Democrats why they're not wearing a mask when they're at these things. Cool. Actually, fine. I think they should ask them these things. It's okay. Ask them that question because I'd like to know. But here, it's not about that, as you've easily pointed out here. It's not about that mask. I just want to go because he answered, by the way, that was a long press conference. That was at the 51 minute mark of the entire press conference. So he got to the point where this woman asked him this. You guys are all collected up there and nobody's wearing masks. How do you feel about that considering it's spreading so hard? Then he went to two other answers, then said, I want to come back to the thing because I have an opportunity. So he had his opportunity, he took it. The problem is he hasn't learned yet. Everyone sees through him. Even Republicans, generally Republicans will circle the wagons for each other and be like, he's helping me by pushing this narrative. So I have to support that narrative in order to keep my narrative going. No one is on a Ted Cruz's narrative. No one, there's no reason for other Republicans to support Ted Cruz's one-off narratives when he decides to make himself the center of attention. So they don't. He just doesn't realize that's how it works yet because he's still trying to be this one-off guy who thinks he's smarter than everyone else. And it's not going to work out. But he's trying to flip that script and be like, you guys are going to call me two more weak a-holes anymore. I'm going to show you I'm strong.
You're 100% right. He has this plan and he can't see that he will never be the guy in the voters' eyes that he wants to be. The voters like him more than they should. Let's give him that. He's stupid and a weenie and they don't 100% see that. But he's not going to be president. The GOP is not, and it's not about Trump. If Trump, you know, succumbs to the filet-o fish tomorrow, there will be someone else who's going to make him look like a coward and like a fool. It's just that is the curse of Ted Cruz. I don't feel that. Sorry about it. Anyway, we're going to take our second break. When we come back, some bad takes for you. Not from us. Ours are going to be good, but we've got some. Don't worry. After this. In the last day, I came across a take so bad that I had to offload it to you. It's like sharing bad news. It makes you feel better. Here's the headline commentary on the Wall Street Journal. Hillary Clinton's 2024 election comeback with a smiling photo of Hillary Clinton. It honestly looks like Hillary Clinton is looking at and smiling at the headline of that op-ed. Yes, please write more takes like this. So what is the argument that is being made here by Douglas Schoen and Andrew Stein? Well, they say, several circumstances, President Biden's low approval rating, doubts over his capacity to run for re-election at 82, Vice President Kamala Harris's unpopularity, and the absence of another strong Democrat to lead the ticket in 2024 have created a leadership vacuum in the party, which Mrs. Clinton could viably fill. She's already in an advantageous position to become the 2024 Democratic nominee. She's an experienced national figure who is younger than Mr. Biden. Oh yes, comparatively. And could offer a different approach from the disorganized and unpopular one the party is currently taking. So it's like, I don't know if you watch The Wheel of Time. There's a group called the Aes Sedai who literally cannot lie. They're magically not able to lie, but they constantly lie because you can say things that are technically sort of true and totally be dishonest. And that is what this is. And Aes Sedai wrote this op-ed about Hillary Clinton. She's a national figure. Yeah, and there are some downsides about that. The current position of the party is unpopular. She literally lost the presidential election. JR, I know that we've seen this before and we will see this again, but why the constantly pushing Hillary? She already had her chance and she lost.
There's a love affair for Hillary Clinton. And I don't know, I was only like 12 when Bill was in office, but there was that love affair with Bill Clinton. And then so that holds on. It's like the Democrats, Ronald Reagan. So the name just sticks in people's heads and they go, oh, but it's Hillary. And first woman president, that'd be awesome if it was Hillary. We're still holding on to that dream of another Clinton, though. That's the thought process for people that don't leave a small mile bubble. It's just, hey, these are the people that run for office. Oh my gosh, she hasn't won yet. Hey, there's an opportunity. Maybe she can win. And totally forgetting. It's not like it's long old history, recent history of what happened and why it happened and what she did and what she didn't do. None of that was addressed. None of that pointing out, hey, she lost because of A, B, and C, so therefore she needs to do D, E, and F. No, none of that. At least you can have an analysis and be like, this is what Hillary Clinton can do if she wants a comeback. This is just, it's Hillary Clinton. There she is.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with people voting for her?
No, there's nobody else. There's just seemingly no, but there's no young Democrats that represent a new wave. There are no, it's just Hillary Clinton. No people of color. No elect. There's mayors and governors and like Stacey Abrams is like it's erasure of everything, erasure of reality. The only thing that is left is a void in space with Hillary Clinton floating in it. That's all that this op-ed is. And despite that, oh, and by the way, let me one more comment. They say that because if Democrats lose control of Congress in 2022, then when she runs in 2024, she can claim the title of change candidate. She's been in politics for 1,000 years. Not a damn person sees her as the change candidate, you knuckleheads.
What are they changing? I'm totally not seeing what the change is here.
I don't know. My blood pressure from only slightly elevated to terminal. I don't know. Here's the thing though. That was a bad op-ed. It wasn't the worst op-ed necessarily. I want to give credit to Nikki Ramirez, who's been on the show for previewing this next one, saying the winning Democratic ticket is a tepid bowl of cream of wheat and Satan's daughter by Paul Krugman. That's coming. But what that's a reference to is Thomas Friedman's Biden Cheney 2024. And when I read that, I will admit, I initially thought and bought that this was an op-ed pitching a Joe Biden Dick Cheney candidacy. Because do you really think they wouldn't do that? No, that's not what it is. It's about Liz Cheney, JR. I find that maybe dumber than let's just do Hillary again. Because I get that there's Hillary stans who are never gonna go away or whatever, or actually most of them, well, it's sad, but they'll die off relatively soon. But the Biden Cheney thing, why? Why would we choose Liz Cheney? Why are you buying into that she's anything more than 2% better than any other Republican?
Well, because she joined the She joined the January 6th committee. She's the co-chair. She's speaking out against Trump. She says these politicians are all involved and MAGA that stormed the Capitol is should be held accountable. And I'm not gonna sleep until it's done. All that is what she's doing. That's all it takes. So again, yeah, for these types of Democratic voters, they have to be the ones to be like, hey, a Republican can say one thing once. And I'm like, oh my God, make her vice president. Why? What is she gonna do as vice president? We don't think beyond the election. We don't think beyond the campaign. Like wouldn't it be great? Couldn't we raise a lot of money if we had Liz Cheney and Joe Biden run? Wouldn't that be great? Hey, wouldn't that be great? Then what? Then what happens?
Then what? What?
Then she passes all these progressive policies. Forget any of that. Then she passes all these normal Democratic policies. No. How about we look at her voting record? Then what? Yeah. Does she support all these things that you support? We forget what the point of electing someone is, so they can represent you and your values and implement and pass policies that'll actually change things and make things better for the country. We forgot that part.
Well, that's your theory of why you would choose someone. They have a different one, which we'll get to, but we have to end this soon. But I'm gonna do a bad thing to the audience, and I'm gonna read the other options they present. Joe Biden and Liz Cheney's one. Joe Biden and Lisa Murkowski. Kamala Harris and Mitt Romney. Stacey Abrams and Liz Cheney. Why would Stacey Abrams ever agree to that, you maniacs? Amy Klobuchar and Liz Cheney. I will move. Nobody wants that. I don't think Liz Cheney wants that. But their reasoning for all this is, no, but you don't understand. This is three-dimensional chess because we put in Liz Cheney with Joe Biden. And then that will be able to, quote, shave a small but decisive fraction of Republican votes away from Trump. In a tight race, it would take only 5 or 10% of Republicans leaving Trump to assure victory. And that is what mattered. In your mind, Liz Cheney, like their argument isn't that adding Liz Cheney gets disaffected Republicans or whatever. It's she will steal Trump voters. So Trump voters who historically love Liz Cheney recently will sign on to Joe Biden. If that's what it takes to get Liz Cheney in the White House. Maniacs.
And why so hell-bent on
New York Times?
Why the piece together a campaign to get Liz Cheney on, to get Biden in office? Because he's doing what? even the Joe Biden. So we're going to help him get back in office so that he can do what? We don't think these things through. We just talk.
No idea. No, because again, you are acting as if politics is about like a political policy and producing gains for the people. No, it's a game. It's a game. I get to make a dumb prediction and honestly, or maybe make a purposefully bad prediction. It's always possible with these sorts of things that they know how stupid all this is, but they want to be talked about. And granted, we're covering this on TDR, and you'll note that I wrote many op-eds for The Hill, and I never once covered it on the show. So I'm part of the problem. Anyway,
if only I had the watch list sooner, I would have covered all of them, John.
There's no video. You wouldn't have. Anyway, that's why I miss doing those. Maybe I'll write an op-ed at some point. Coming to Substack soon, John Iderola. Anyway, okay, let's jump into one more story to close out the hour. Apologies in advance to the audience, but you got to watch this.
Democrats, they hate our Second Amendment because ultimately the truth is it's our Second Amendment rights, our right to bear arms that protect Americans and give us the ability to defend ourselves from a tyrannical government. And I hate to use this language, but Democrats, they're doing exactly what our founders talked about when they gave us these precious rights that we have. And you know, no one wants violence. And I say it all the time, I'm not a violent person. And I hope to never see a civil war in this country. And that's why you hear me toss around national divorce, because the federal government has grown so big and the Democrats are willing to use the power of the federal government that it really violates people's rights. And this is why state rights are so important. And it's a shame. We shouldn't think that way. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But we always have to make sure that we're defending our Second Amendment rights and making sure that our state rights are protected.
Okay, because in her words, the Democrats are willing to use the federal government. She didn't say for what or why that was bad or why you should be scared. Just they use it. That's it. She assumes that everybody tunes out when she speaks as a defense mechanism to not suffer brain damage. But anyway, there, let's just keep it real. She said the Second Amendment is to defend against a tyrannical government, and the Democrats are doing exactly that thing. I don't like violence or anything, but I believe the Second Amendment is the answer, not just hypothetically, but in this specific instance, it is the answer.
With this specific instance, what, right now, this particular year?
Because of what the Democrats are doing. They're willing to use the power of the federal government.
Yeah, so rise up in arms, national divorce, civil war, to rise up against a tyrannical government. That's what our founding fathers gave us. First off, they didn't give everyone that, because our founding fathers said that a significant portion of people that are living here are not humans. So anyways, that's what they didn't give us. But when do we stop rising up against the government with our arms? Because it's only, by the way, only conservatives have guns in this country. Because, you know, those dumb libs and those Democrats just don't own guns. That's that same stupid talking point that Madison Cawthorn types like to say. We only have the guns. Anyways, even outside of that, so when do you stop with your rise against the tyrannical government? Because I would assume Marjorie Taylor Greene wants Donald Trump to be back in office. I assume that she wants him to at least be Speaker of Minority Leader. A majority leader or Speaker of the House, whatever the hell they want to put him in. So if we're rising up against the government now, when Donald Trump comes back into power like you want,
do we
put our guns down? Do we stop shooting at the government? Is the government no longer tyrannical because he came in? I thought it was a deep state. I thought that, you know, it's all getting run, and we've seen him in office. Was it tyrannical then? Should we've risen then? When do we put the guns down? Because you know, you're gonna rise up and get to shooting. When do we stop?
I guess when your clip runs dry, I suppose. I don't know. Look, obviously she's her whole thing, the whole identity that she is trying to present to people is I am the most willing to approve of political violence. That's what she's doing. It's very conscious. We play these videos for you to constantly remind you that these people are out there. They're very popular. They are an increasingly large part of the Republican Party, and it obviously has only one end, which is more blood. More that I want to say on this, maybe when we come back, we'll have a little bit, but Marjorie Greene and Hillary Clinton 2024, no thank you. Anyway, that is regrettably all the time we have for our first hour. So thank you if you're watching on the linear platforms, but if you're on Twitter and YouTube, including the raid that just came in from Abilina Sabrina. Thank you to the Raiders and Abilina. If you're on Twitch or YouTube, there is another half hour coming, including international news. Meanwhile, Lynn, don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.